It is 8:30, and you are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. And we have with us in the studios once again, both of them, John Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, two of the three co-editors at Eat the Seattle.
You guys are healthy this week, aren't you?
Well, healthy.
You know, I don't have much of an immune system, and man, it sounded like the CDC needed to quarantine this place last week.
We had to bug bomb the whole place.
I'll bet, or you know, spray for West Nile or something. I mean, it sounded brutal. I was impressed that you guys were soldiering through. But yes, I'm happy to be back.
Very good.
Good.
I'm happy to have most of my voice back.
And you're not going to blow your nose on the air this week?
I can't guarantee that.
Okay.
I'm still recovering.
Well, hopefully one more week.
And there is a lot of it going around. I'm sure there are some folks just lying in bed this morning. So you have our sympathy.
Or more folks lying in bed than usual.
Yep.
So last week we started the election wrap-up or predictions or whatever you want to call it. Recommendations. Coverage.
Yeah, indeed. And heard y'all going through the various initiatives, and that was fine. Maria was pretty close to representing how I felt on the ones where she mentioned the differences. But so we left ourselves with the elected candidates, and there aren't that many, which is, I mean, you know, you're hearing all of this hand-wringing, particularly in sort of progressive websites these days, about voter apathy and how nobody cares about this election. And nationally, it's very true that you have, you know, Congress in the balance, but fewer than 10% of the nation's population lives in a place where there is actually a contested race for Congress. In most places, including all of Washington State, there is not one, I believe, of the nine congressional House of Representatives districts in Washington State, talking about Capitol Hill here, that is actually a close race this year. I mean, you know, Heidi Behrens Benedict is wonderful running against Jennifer Burns, but you know, Jennifer Dunn. I mean, but yeah, she only got 34% in the primary. So, you know, again, and that's a lot closer than some. McDermott really, he has a Libertarian running against him who will get probably 7%.
I think he's unopposed.
No, well, oh, that's right, because the Libertarian would have dropped out in the primary.
Yeah.
But that really translates to the state races as well. I mean, there are really very few of those that are contested statewide. There's one in Spokane that is drawing a huge amount of money this year because it's one of the few that's going to determine which way Olympia goes in terms of which party controls Olympia next year. Mm. And we don't have all that many in the state, in the Seattle area also. Almost all of the ones in city, of course, were contested, as with Dunn or Klein and Mason. Those were determined in the primary because all we really have are Democrats in this city so far.
And some of the Democrats are better than others.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we put in the state in each of our election issues is the sort of ritual little rant of nobody deserves to run unopposed, and no matter how good or how bad they are. And we had a couple of sort of minor party candidates, and you know, I hate using the term minor party, but until they have more major
more candidates running
and more major offices under their belt and more consistently, you know, show above 5% in the returns, that's how they're going to be labeled. And one of them is the Green Party candidate Linda Knighton, running in the 43rd, which is the Capitol Hill district, against Pat Thibodeau. And Thibodeau is one of the many Senate Democrats in Olympia, and not all of them, certainly. There's some very good ones, but there are quite a few that are just sort of warm bodies occupying their seat or that are really doing a severe disservice to their constituents on a lot of issues. And Thibodeau actually falls into the latter category. She's had some really sort of abysmal in bed with lobbyist type votes over the years on various issues, but Knighton is very, very good as a candidate, so she's definitely worth voting for the Greens. And then in the 37th, where Norm Rice's designated golden boy Eric Pettigrew is running
for the House,
and he again drew my ire in the primary for putting out this really very nasty and totally undeserved hit piece on Cheryl Chow, and it takes a lot to make me sympathetic for Cheryl Chow. I didn't really think it was possible until he did it. Dredging up this very minor campaign violation of hers from 5 years ago and making it sound like a big deal and making it sound like it was current and not identifying where the card came from and sending it out to a lot of households. Very, very underhanded kind of stuff. And, if somebody has those kind of morals, I don't want them representing me. He has a libertarian running against him named Ruth Bennett, who actually was the best of the libertarians a couple of years ago when she ran for lieutenant governor, very strong on anti-drug war, very strong on military stuff in this case. From the non-capitalism uber alles wing of the libertarians. And I actually like her quite a bit. But other than those two, we really lack choices in a lot of the other races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are so many races where the Democrats are running unopposed. Now, some of the Democrats are not too bad. For example, for the state Senate, Adam Klein is actually a good choice in the 37th district.
Velma Vlory is very good, and I put her in the Senate instead of the House in the state issue, which right. there were actually a couple of proofreading errors in there that were kind of embarrassing this year.
But. Jean Cole Wells is also pretty good. She sits on the board for Real Change newspaper, and she also sits on the board for the Monorail. She's done some good things for people in her district. On the other hand, you have some state senators who are do-nothings. Yeah. For example, Ken Jacobson.
Very much do-nothings.
In the 46th district. In fact, all the representatives in the 46th districts. I'd just like to say, what is it with the 46th district? We clearly pretty much need some Green Party candidates in there to give those Democrats a kick in the butt.
Yeah, it's really, to me, it's been very disappointing, and I can't reel too much about it because I haven't done a lot to make it happen either, but all of the volunteer energy that came out of the Nader campaign 2 years ago and all of the rhetoric at that time was that energy would be transformed into local organizing and local candidates running on local ballots. And we have one viable candidate this year from the Green Party, that being Linda Knighton.
And that's a good start. I mean, Pat Thibodeau needs a challenger.
Yeah, I'm glad that she
really
is
does.
Running, but there are at least a half dozen others in the Seattle area that also deserve a challenge.
Yeah, Ken Jacobson needs to be challenged in the 46th district. Both of the 46th district House representatives need to be challenged.
Yeah, there is nothing special about Joe McDermott in West Seattle at all.
Mm-hmm.
Eileen Cody, who has a background with the SEIU and healthcare, has insinuated herself in the healthcare debate in Olympia in a way that has not been helpful at all. I mean, there's just a number there's one in the 36. I mean, there's several whose names I can't even remember. They're such non-entities. Several from North Seattle that I didn't think to bring the list with me.
Actually, I think the 36th district is not too bad. Helen Summers has some good financial experience, and we're going to need that Democrat with financial experience working on the budget.
Helen is very good. I like her quite
Mary
a bit.
Mary Lou Dickerson is the other 36th district Democrat.
That was who we were talking about before we went on the air.
That
our friend ran against a few years ago.
Yeah.
But and there's one farther north who's involved in budget who I can't remember but anyway, folks get the idea that we really just do need more candidates.
Yeah, we need some Green Party people or some good rabble rousing left wing Democrats to give these people a real kick.
And even within the Democratic Party, most of these precincts in the Seattle area, you could go in with three or four people and control the precinct committees. It's not like there's a lot of people involved in party politics in the city of Seattle. It's not the sort of thing that is most people's idea of a good time going to those meetings. So
and whether or not you actually win the race,
it's wide open.
Whether or not you actually win the race doesn't matter if you do what Joe Swaya did for Jim McDermott. You give him a little nudge in the right direction. That's important too.
And there are an awful lot of people, including Joe, who think that his very strong showing against McDermott 2 years ago really made a big difference in McDermott's performance since then, including his very visible anti-war stances in the past few months. Those were the kind of things he was not doing before Swaya ran against
him. Yeah, I also think Deborah Senn running against Patty Murray may have had some influence on her. Not as big as Joe's race against Jim McDermott, but I think Patty Murray has gotten off her butt and is doing more, not just because she's in more positions of power in the Democratic Party, but also because she got a bit of a kick from Deborah Senn running against her. I'd like to know what happened.
Senn ran against Cantwell.
Oh, she ran. Sorry. I'm sorry.
But obviously,
damn,
it put the fear
but
in her.
But it did. Yeah. I think it did put the... But actually, I think it did put the fear in Patty Murray.
There has been a change. There definitely has been a change.
There has been a change in her. And I think Patty Murray seeing that there are people out there like that.
By the way, I didn't get a chance to listen to all of it because I was on my way to the Trafficking Women and Children Conference at UW last year when you folks
last
were...
Last week?
Last week, rather, when you folks were...
time flies.
Yeah, it does. It's been a long, long week, let me tell you. Between going to the INS jail a couple times last weekend and going to a conference on human slavery, it was not an up with people kind of weekend. But did you talk about Referendum 53 and the yes means no and no means yes? Because we actually got that wrong in Eat the State for anybody who's looking on the web or looking at our paper.
People should vote yes on Referendum 53.
Yeah,
wait, didn't you correct it on the web version?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, we did correct it on the web.
I think we did.
We better go back and check. But anyway, vote yes on 53 because you don't want it to become law. If that makes any sense, it's a housing.
You want to reform the unemployment insurance fund.
Yeah, and the housing industry wants to reform it in such a way as to essentially leave them off the hook for paying their fair share of taxes.
Uh-huh. Yes on 53. No
yes
on 51.
53. Yes. No on 51.
That is correct.
All right. Getting real quick. Getting back to running people in the different districts in this area. How many districts do we have for the city of Seattle, roughly?
That's a good question.
About a dozen, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're looking at it realistically. We need about a dozen people.
Yeah, I mean, there are some districts where people are very good. Velma Valoria is
there's
very
some candidates.
Good.
But we should always run
Ed
people.
Murray is
Nobody
good.
Should be a shoo-in.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But I would start with the people that you know who could use the kick in the butt. And there are more of those than just Pat Thibodeau.
Yeah.
Definitely. All
so
right.
So there's that. The only other races that are really on the ballot that are contested, there are a few more court positions that are uncontested. Norm Mailing running for...
There are 18 court positions, and there are only three that are contested.
Yeah, and those are the two Supreme Court and one was it Municipal Court was the other one?
Yeah, two Supreme Court.
District
one
court.
Was King County District Court.
King County District Court was the other one. Yeah, I'm looking at it here. The two state Supreme Courts, one of them in particular is a real... It's a race between somebody who is not ideal and somebody who could potentially be either kind of good or very, very bad, and that is the Jim Johnstone versus Mary Fairhurst race. Jim Johnson, just so that folks can make up their own mind, he has been lawyer for, among other things, Tim Eymond's a couple of Tim Eymond's different initiatives for the Referendum 48 Property Rights Initiative. He's been involved in a number of anti-treaty right things, starting with under Slade Gordon as Attorney General, taking all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, what wound up being the Bolt decision on fishing rights, and has had a real passion and actually brags quite proudly about his role in combating Native Americans. He seems to take a real personal zeal in making sure that Native Americans don't get what they were paid in exchange for our taking all of their land when those treaties were signed. Mm-hmm. And he's really been involved in just about every bad far right wing initiative and political initiative over the past number of years. He's very heavily involved with the Wise Use movement. Anyway, he is running for state Supreme Court, and he is running against a woman who has no judicial experience either. She is sort of a lifelong state employee, a woman named Mary Fairhurst. And she would sort of be sort of in the Faith Ireland, good old boys and girls. We're all sort of in this club together that I normally cannot stand. In fact, I just will say straight out, I can't stand. I think, you know, that sort of complacency is the last thing we need. And Johnson's rights rhetoric around civil liberties and civil rights could be very welcome. He could be a Richard Sanders type of justice who, because of his libertarian leanings in an era of, you know, the war on terror and all of the various things that Gary Locke would like to do in the next legislative session, the same reason Adam Klein needs to be reelected, we need to be able to stop that kind of stuff. So Johnson could actually fulfill a good role, but he could also, you know, he didn't seem to be that concerned about property rights when it comes to the properties of Native Americans, for example. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be very selective and very political, and I think he's likely to be very dangerous if on the court. So I would much rather have the non-entity than an act of harm.
So for that reason, I would vote
for Mary Fairhurst. Yeah. And then the other state Supreme Court race, that one is state Supreme Court District 3, position 3, rather, is Johnston Fairhurst. Position 4 is also a fairly clear choice. The incumbent is a guy named Charles Johnson, not to be confused with Jim. He is very good. He is one of the better state Supreme Court justices, and he is running against a woman named Pam Lijinsky, who is a Kitsap County assistant prosecutor, I believe, and her zeal for things like the death penalty and, you know, throw away the key type politics is really very, very disturbing. And we really do not need another prosecutor on the state Supreme Court. So it's Charles Johnson for one, and then for the other, Pam Lijinsky. And then we have the one district court race for King County District
Court. Mary Fairhurst for position 3. And Charles Johnson for position 4.
You can tell that I'm not really awake this morning.
That's all right. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. And believe me, I'm appreciative. And then King County District Court is the other one, position number 3.
Number 3. Yeah.
And Art Chapman is actually a very, very good candidate for that one. He's been involved with drug court, a mental health court, and a number of reforms in court. And he is, I can't even remember who he's running against.
He's running against Susan Noonan.
She's
another prosecuting attorney.
Yeah. So Art Chapman in that race.
Getting with the positions for Supreme Court and judges and stuff, can anybody run for these?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And are they, like, for instance, tied to districts, or it's, can I just, I want position 7. I just like the number 7.
Well, for the state Supreme Court, yes, they are not tied, or rather, no, they are not tied to districts. They're open. It's just different positions. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there is a long tradition of people who do not have experience being lawyers and or rather judges, and in a couple cases, not even being lawyers, people being on the Supreme Court. It can be done in Washington State. So, but you know, the Bar Association will rate you, and you know, you'll have a much harder time
getting elected. But yeah, for particularly positions like the Seattle Municipal Court, it's possible.
All
of the Seattle Municipal Court judges are running unopposed.
Yeah, and you know, Jeanette Barrage is a prime example of somebody who's profoundly unqualified to be a judge who has kept running again and again, and in some cases getting elected, because people liked her political message.
All right.
Some people.
Well, something else to keep in mind for everybody listening, that not only do we have a dozen or so districts to fill, but we also have some judges.
Oh, yeah. I think a Green Party judicial candidate would be wonderful.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And that's the other thing, is that not all judicial races are nonpartisan in this state either. I mean, the ones that we have locally, by and large, are. But in many states, for example, the state Supreme Court is a partisan race.
Anything else on candidates?
I think that's plenty, other than get out on Tuesday and vote. It does matter.
All right. Very, very good idea. So let's let's move along. The week, you couldn't really miss the fact that there was a incident in Russia involving
Now that Putin has gassed his own people, are we going to start sending in the troops?
Yeah, I think we need regime change in Moscow.
I think so too.
And you know, if you want to talk about an outlaw regime that's, you know, by and large controlled by the mafia, or various mafias. I mean, it's really quite frightening what's gone on in Russia in the last 10 years. It's been a sell off to Western corporations, basically, with local organized crime taking a big cut. And, there has been an opportunity to discuss some of that in the media in the last week with the gas incident, but there's been an awful lot of things that have not been in the media about that incident.
Yeah, one of the major things they haven't talked about is why were those Chechens in the theater in the first place?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
it has even gone so far, and I think they actually mentioned this in passing in Counterspin also, it's gone so far as to tie it into the war on terror, that these were terrorists in Moscow.
And this was Russia's 9-1-1.
Yeah, exactly.
9-11.
And And, you know, it would be Russia's 9/11 if America had in the past gone into Afghanistan and committed genocide against quite a few of its people. And Afghanistan were, you know, a part of the United States already that was trying to achieve independence after other parts of the United States had already done so. I mean, it is not even remotely analogous as a situation.
And I think if people really want to see that, all you need to do is go to the Amnesty International website or Human Rights Watch website.
Any of those groups.
And pull up Chechnya and look and see what the Russian military has been doing in Chechnya for the past several years. Right now, human rights groups are helping Chechens all over the country dig up mass graves outside of former Russian military posts. And in those mass graves are the bodies of Chechen men who have been rounded up in operations where the Russian military will go in and just round up all the men of a certain age in a village, take them off to the military post and beat and torture and question them, often beating many of them to death.
Yeah,
a lot of these are bodies of people who've been tortured and some summarily executed without trial and dumped in a mass grave, and that's something that the Chechens are dealing with right now.
For some reason, they seem upset.
Yeah, I wonder why.
It's the sort of thing where the gassing of the 100 or so hostages and a number of the hostage takers as well in Moscow was treated as some sort of a mass aberration. It's not an aberration. It's part and parcel with the Russians having...
This is what the Russian military does.
Yeah, they kill civilians who happen to be in the neighborhood, where, you know, regardless of whether they have committed any crime or not. And, you know, the only thing different about the gassing was that it was a novel technique. The end result is very much of a part with what Russia has been doing in Chechnya for the last decade.
And then the cover-up afterwards as well. Much of what's gone on in Chechnya, the atrocities there have been covered up, and the rest of the world hasn't been paying attention. Well, we saw that again with the gas. No information was given to doctors on how to treat the gas until after the bodies started to arrive, and many of them turned up dead. Doctors were frantic. What do we give these people? What do we give these people? Finally, they were told what to give them. They started asking, what did you do to these people?
Yeah.
And it didn't come out until days afterwards
what kind
of gas was used.
And it started coming out because coroners in places like Germany, where some of the foreign victims had
started
been shipped, started doing mm-hmm. blood analyses and getting results back from the lab and seeing some of these exotic things that were in people's bloodstreams.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things I wanted to mention about this is the whole... international attitude toward Russia in terms of what it does in Chechnya is very much been affected by 9/11, and this once again is why the United States is so reviled in the Muslim world. Chechnya is a Muslim republic. The victims there, the people that are being buried in massive graves, are all Muslims, and you have now the United States cozying up to Russia and saying, you can go ahead and do whatever you want in Chechnya. We will continue to give you international credit. We will give you more international credit, so you in turn can spend some of your money instead on your armed forces in Chechnya, and we won't say a word about it, so that we can have your help in fighting the war on terror. People in this country don't notice that. People in the Islamic world very much notice that.
Yeah, and they also know that in Chechnya you don't have the kind of fundamentalist Muslim movement like you had in Afghanistan. I mean, the people in the theater were men and women. You wouldn't have found that in a group of Taliban or a group of Al-Qaeda. It would have been all men, for example. Plus, the gassing was done. It was not necessary. The Chechens in the theater were negotiating with the Russian military up until the moment that gas was pumped into the theater. They were still talking to each other. There was no reason for them to actually do that kind of a macho-style raid. They just did it because Putin wanted to save face.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, he's a mass murderer.
Yeah, which, you know, he has been for some time.
Yeah, not just innocent hostages in the Russian
theater.
Yeah, also
his KGB background even before the communists.
Yeah, people tend to forget that when Putin ran for the presidency, his handlers had to keep him away from all of the kids at his campaign stops because every time he'd pick up a baby, it would scream and cry and vomit all over him.
It's very, very true. And,
he's
you know,
a,
babies
he's a disturbing
can teach us a lot.
Person.
Right, and then one other thing that the U.S. is not going to raise any questions about this is the fact that it desperately needs the Soviet or the Russian approval on U.N. resolution for invading Iraq.
Yeah, and in fact, that again is one of the things that the Russians, I mean, there's this whole laundry list we talked about a few weeks ago that all these countries are looking for in exchange for a UN resolution that the U.S. wants on Iraq, and one of the things that Russia wants very much is a free hand to do whatever it wants in the former Soviet republics.
Yeah. Right. So we only have about 3 minutes left, and Maria, your friend at the SEC, Harvey Pitt.
Don't call him my friend.
Oh, no. I've seen the mail going back and forth between you two.
Yeah, SEC Chairman Harvey Pitt, he used to be a lawyer that represented accounting firms when they were sued for accounting misdeeds. He is the head of the SEC, appointed by the Bush administration. The SEC has been trying to set up the new accounting oversight board to police the accounting industry. And as part of that, they've been going through this long period of negotiating who would be the head of this new accounting oversight board. There are five commissioners, of which Harvey Pitt is the head of the commission, that would vote on and decide who would be the new head. They looked at several good candidates, including John Biggs, who was a former head of TIAA CREF, a large college teachers retirement fund, who would have been an excellent choice for the job. But instead, what happened and what people are almost certain happened is the White House called up Harvey Pitt and said, no, you have to make William Webster the head of this accounting oversight board. William Webster has no accounting background at all.
Former head of the FBI.
Former head of the FBI and director of the CIA. He was a federal judge who helped oversee the Teamsters Union when it was under receivership.
A political hack, in
he
other words.
Is, yeah, and he is, what, 78, 79 years old? I don't know where they dig up these fossils, but they would much rather have somebody who is an old conservative in the job than somebody who will actually do the job of oversight.
And somebody who has no experience accounting at
but
all.
But get this, the funny part of it is the vote was narrow. It was a 3-2 decision. There were two commissioners who weren't comfortable with voting for William Webster, thank God. But the day after, it turned out that William Webster has sat on the board of two companies that are under investigation by the SEC. One of them, U.S. Technologies, a Maryland judge called it, said that the CEO of U.S. Technologies, quote, his misdeeds may rise to the level of criminal conduct. William Webster sat on the audit committee for that company. So the day after the vote, the two commissioners who voted against him went into the office of the two other commissioners under Harvey Pitt and said, we got to do something. We got to do something. This cannot stand. So now there's an investigation going on, and I'm sure Harvey Pitt's going to lose his job. This is insane.
It does stink to high heaven.
So William Webster does have some experience in this area.
He has experience in watching misdeeds occur and not saying anything.
Yeah. And we don't have time to go into it this week, but I did write about it for the Weekly next week. Dr. Richard Wynn, if anybody has ever wanted to hear me rant about those lenient judges, this is a case where a guy ripped off taxpayers for millions of dollars, and so the result after his conviction is taxpayers are going to pay him a few more million in order to retire.
Dr. Richard Wynn is at the UW, Medicare.
He's the
fraud scandal going
the,
on there.
Yeah, the neurosurgeon who is the dean of the neurosurgery department at UW for a number of years, and you know, when you have a very prestigious guy that is hauled before the bench, you know, he gets a package any CEO would be proud of.
Meanwhile, the students constantly get their
tuition
raised.
Yes. and Medicare cuts back on the, you know, the number of services the patients can get.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Talking once again with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, who are co-editors at Eat the State. And real quickly, one of you tell us where can we find Eat the State?
It is a free publication that shows up at bookstores and cafes and in many parts of town when our distribution system works well. When it doesn't, you can still, and even when it does, you can find it on the web at www.eatthestate.org. All of the election information, almost all of it accurate, is is up there for folks who are interested. It's up there for folks who are not interested as well. well. And for people who are interested also in volunteering or who have feedback, story ideas, any of that kind of stuff, you can give us a call at area code 206-903-9461. And a week from today, on the 9th of November, we are having a volunteer fair hanging out at a house in Wallingford and meeting with people and getting folks signed up. So we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. But for folks who are interested in getting involved, give us a call and we'll give you information on that.